Shabbat Shalom. This Shabbat we read from Parashat Vayishlach. The portion begins with our forefather Jacob. He's returning to the land of Canaan. He had fled the land years earlier and now returns with a large family and significant wealth. Yet, he isn't returning with the confidence that reflects the self-made man. The text says, Vayira Yaakov me'od, Vayetzerlo. Jacob was greatly afraid and was distressed. The rabbis wonder, what is Jacob so scared of that the text has to double the expression, Vayira and Vayetzer, afraid and distressed? Rashi, the medieval commentator, explains that Jacob does indeed have a double fear. He is afraid that upon his return to the land, he will be killed. Remember, he fled the land because he had made an enemy out of his brother. And he's distressed because he might have to kill others. The fear of being killed and the distress of killing others is the state of Israel today. A country that suffered the massacre of its people, which propelled it into a war that it must fight. This is the Israel that Rabbi Hirsch and I encountered when we brought 9 Amplify Israel Rabbinic Fellows to Israel last month. The Amplify Israel Rabbinic Fellowship is for early career Reform rabbis who study with us and their mentors for a year of professional development. The aim is to strengthen their and the Reform movement's commitment to and mobilization around Israel and Jewish peoplehood. Their leadership, together with that of the cohorts of fellows to follow, will ensure that the next generations of American Jews are raised knowing that Israel is an essential part of their Jewish identity. They will be passionate about Israel and being part of the Jewish people. In many ways, a professional development trip to Israel for Jewish leaders is mundane, common. I've led these programs before. They are always impactful, but not unique. Yet, in November 2023, there was nothing average, run-of-the-mill about our experience. We were the only group in Israel that maintained their previously scheduled trip. Every other tour that had planned to be in Israel at this time was canceled. There were, however, 4-day missions to Israel by rabbis, Jewish communal professionals, and lay leaders. There were volunteers arriving as individuals and in small groups, but we were the only tour in Israel. To give you a sense of what that means, our hotel was located on the beach in Tel Aviv. It wasn't filled with tourists, as it should have been. Rather, it was filled with evacuees from the city of Sderot. Somewhere between 200,000 and 250,000 people are internally displaced in Israel today. They have been moved from the border with Gaza and the northern border with Lebanon. Understand for a moment what they're going through and what we witnessed up close. They weren't sampling the ample Israeli breakfast, but trying to create a sense of home and normalcy for toddlers and young children who have lost their beloved schedules and routines. Children who just want the food to taste like home. I'll teach you a new post-October 7th Hebrew word. Shigra. Its usual spelling ends in a hey. Spelled that way, it means routine. But these families are experiencing shigra with an ayin. Changing the last letter transforms the word with the addition of ra, evil. They are creating new routines born out of the evil of October 7th. When a 14-year-old girl was sobbing at the entrance to the hotel in her mother's arms, it was evident that there is nothing routine or normal in Israel at this time. One of our objectives for our symposium was to get to know the reform movement in Israel. It turns out, as we learned from our fellows, that most of them had limited exposure to the Israeli movement when they were in rabbinical school. This would be their first time meeting their Israeli colleagues and learning about the work they do. On our original schedule, we had planned to meet with Rabbi Yael Vorgan at Kibbutz Nachal Oz. Kibbutz Nachal Oz is on the border of Gaza, the closest community in Israel to Gaza City. Our meeting with Rabbi Vorgan would have been an opportunity to learn about her role as a regional rabbi. This means that she doesn't serve a particular congregation in one location. Rather, she engages Jews where they are, running programs, prayer services, life cycle events, and being a presence in their lives for counseling and care. She is a beloved religious leader in the lives of thousands of Jews. Today, the region she serves is almost entirely evacuated. To meet her members, she travels from kibbutz to kibbutz in the north and from hotel to hotel in other regions of the country. Your donations to the Stephen Wise Free Synagogue Humanitarian Fund have helped Rabbi Vorgan continue her delivery of much-needed spiritual first aid. On this day, we met her sitting alongside Amir Tibon, the famed journalist at Kibbutz Mishmar HaEmek in the Jezreel Valley. Amir, too, was originally scheduled to meet us on the Gaza border. The best journalists are known for asking hard-hitting questions, the questions that challenge the interviewee to identify their values, their plans, and to reveal their next steps. Our meeting with Amir had all of these qualities, yet he acted as both interviewer and interviewee. He challenged himself to define his connection to the land of his kibbutz on the border of Gaza and assess his future there. He began by reminding us of Moshe Dayan, then Chief of Staff of Israel's Armed Forces, eulogy of Roy Rotberg. Roy was 21 years old in 1956. He had moved from Tel Aviv to Kibbutz Nachal Oz and served as its head of security. One morning, in the fields alone, he was overtaken by terrorists and murdered. I'll read some excerpts. Yesterday with daybreak, Roy was murdered. The quiet of a spring morning blinded him, and he did not see the stalkers of his soul on the furrow. Let us not hurl blame at the murderers. Why should we complain of their hatred for us? A generation of settlement are we, and without the steel helmet and the maw of the cannon, we shall not plant a tree, nor build a house. Our children shall not have lives to live if we do not dig shelters. And without the barbed wire fence and the machine gun, we shall not pave a path nor drill for water. The millions of Jews, annihilated without a land, peer out at us from the ashes of Israel's history and command us to settle and rebuild a land for our people. But beyond the furrow that marks the border lies a surging sea of hatred and vengeance, yearning for the day that tranquility blunts our alertness. We mustn't avert our eyes, lest our hands be weakened and our lives severed. Dayan's 285-word eulogy became famous throughout Israel and was memorized by Israeli youth. They valued his message. Everyone in Israel must see themselves as pioneers, plant with one hand and fight with the other. These acts go together. Yet, Amir explained that the founders of Kibbutz Nachal Oz were enraged by his words and claimed that Dayan was wrong. They believed that they have every right to bask in the beauty of the kibbutz, that they had founded. They should take pride in the harvest on a land that hasn't yielded produce until the arrival of these pioneers. They should celebrate their ample livestock, and most of all, enjoy every moment of their beautiful children running around carefree. Security in Gaza would be the responsibility of the army. The development of the kibbutz and their utopian way of life should be their primary concern. Until October 7th, Amir had sided with the founders of the kibbutz. Moshe Dayan was wrong, he claimed. Living on the border was not going to come at a cost. However, after spending more than 10 hours in silence with his two young daughters and wife, hiding from terrorists, witnessing the murder of 14 members of the kibbutz, and having seven taken hostage, Amir now believes that Moshe Dayan's warning was accurate and correct. And you and I now know from the articles we are reading that vigilance about security on this border was lacking. When Amir and Miri moved to the kibbutz and were married there poolside, they were fulfilling the Zionist dream of settling the country to its borders. And for years, their life there was idyllic. They were also needed there in 2014 because the kibbutz had just experienced the exodus of many of its young families. Kibbutz Nachal Oz is too close to the Gaza border to have an effective alarm system. By the time an alarm alerts you that a rocket has launched, it's almost too late to get to the shelter. In 2014, during another Hamas war with Israel, a four-year-old, Daniel, was killed by shrapnel in his home. This reality was too hard to bear for many of the kibbutz families with young children. So they packed up and left. However, in the 9 years since, the kibbutz grew from the arrival of new families with young children, including Amir's family. We concluded our conversation without asking, or Amir answering, the most difficult question. What happens next? When given the opportunity to return to the kibbutz on the border, will his family of four with two young girls go back? It is a question that feels too cruel to ask now. So we left it unasked. This was the tenor of our meetings and conversations throughout our time in Israel. The future is unknown. It's unclear. But at the same time, the entire country is mobilized. They are mobilized to achieve the return of all hostages. Civil society has banded together to serve the needs of the evacuees and the soldiers. And we had the honor of volunteering for this cause. And there's consensus that Israel's borders must be made safe to enable all of its citizens to return home. There's too much that is unknown about when and how this will happen and what Israel will look like when it does. But the message of Israel's citizens is clear. Israel is our homeland. We will not budge from it. There is no place else to go, and the terrorism of Israel's neighbors and enemies will be shut down. That is the way forward, and there is deep faith that Israel has stood up successfully to these enemies in the past and will do so once again. What was it that frightened our forefather Jacob about entering the land of Israel? It's that the path ahead wasn't clear. Therefore, he turned in prayer to God, saying, God of my fathers, you told me to return to this land. You made a covenant with Abraham, saying that on this land my descendants would be greater than the sand of the sea. Yet I can't see how this will come to fruition. The answer came when later in the portion, Jacob's name was changed to Israel, the name that the people and the state carry to this day. Jacob's fears might not have been sufficiently quelled while he lived. He had a hard life. Yet, approximately 4,000 years later, the state of Israel was established and carries his name. Israel lives on, and today it is home to over 7 million of his descendants. On Thursday evening, Hanukkah begins. It's the darkest season, and we fill it with light. This year, more than ever, let us seek light in all of the places we can find it. We can find it in the stories of the heroes of October 7th, Jews and non-Jews alike. We can find it in the faces of those returned to Israel from captivity. And we can find it in this new data point. Representatives of a number of the evacuated kibbutzim on the Gaza border report a significant increase in inquiries for membership in their kibbutzim. Kibbutz Nachal Oz might just double in size when it returns home. On this holiday of rededication, we look ahead with confidence to the rededication of these kibbutzim. And when that happens, the Amplify Israel Rabbinic Fellows and you, the members of Stephen Wise Free Synagogue, will be there to mark that historic event. May Kibbutz Nachal Oz's future be as bright as the candles we will light.